Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Unlike Bill Clinton, New York State inhaled.
New York State got about $6 billion of federal funds last year in terms of stimulus, and we inhaled it, and we injected it into our body, and it is now gone.
But New York is now in withdrawal, as the governor suggests, from the drug known as President Obama's stimulus. And that's one reason the Empire State has a $10 billion deficit that Governor Cuomo there proposed to close in his budget address yesterday. He compared the state's budgeting to Enron, fictional accounting. Maybe he didn't use Bernie Madoff because Cuomo is from Queens and he's probably a Mets fan. But he spoke about the need for serious reforms, especially in education and Medicaid spending. On education,
highest paid school superintendent makes $386,000. I applied for that job. I failed. I ran for governor.
And on Medicaid, here's about a minute and a half, and this is serious stuff, of the governor arguing that Medicaid has become about the industry's needs rather than the patient's.
The home health care program, which is a program I know very well, I investigated it as attorney general. It's also one of the fastest growing Medicaid programs in the law. From 2003 to 2009, almost a 90% increase in the benefits that go to a recipient. 90%. $1 of Medicaid money first goes to what's called a certified home health agency, a CHA, they call it. The CHA then takes 26 cents for administrative overhead and contracts with a licensed home care service agency called Elixir, which takes 26 cents of overhead, and then contracts with the actual caregiver, who is the person who's going to go into the home to provide the care, who gets 48 cents. When you redesign the programs, find ways to reduce cost and find ways to take the fat out of the system. The Medicaid system was not supposed to be spending more than 50 cents on the dollar for overhead. Medicaid is not about supporting the home health care industry. It really isn't. It was about getting care to a person. 48 cents goes to the caregiver, to the person. Redesign it, find out how to do away with the 52, save money for the taxpayer, and actually get better services for the person.
Governor Cuomo, from his budget address. And with that, I welcome Errol Lewis, host of Inside City Hall on New York One Television, and WNYC political reporter Ozzie Pabura, author of the Empire blog. Hi, Errol. Hi, Ozzie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ozzie, we'll step back from the politics for a second. I really found that home health aid story revealing, if true. Does that say a lot about special interest and their influence in Albany budgeting?
I think there are better examples of the influence of special interest. Notably, the governor, I think, would point to the automatic price increasers or revenue accelerators. And he, I think, referred to them as the special interest protection program sort of thing. I think the 52-48 split between overhead, I think, is a symbol of just how unwieldy the entire bureaucracy of Medicaid has become as it's run through New York.
Errol, you want to get in on that? I think that clip was, you know, it was very clear anyway as a story to New Yorkers, apocryphal or whatever.
Yeah, I had learned about this a couple of years ago because when I was back at the Daily News on the editorial board, we kind of went through this stuff and we were shocked and outraged back then. And, you know, if you know people, I know folks who are in the nursing business, and believe it or not, they actually will defend that system of passing the money through one bureaucracy after another before some tiny sub-minimum wage ends up in the hands of the actual caregiver. And the defense is that, well, you've got to have standards, you've got to have oversight, you can't give a de facto monopoly to any one group. And so folks, you know, in the past at least, would actually defend it. But I thought it was an excellent example of how to ordinary people, to taxpayers, we've got a system that is guaranteed not only to get more and more expensive at a precipitous rate, but not to deliver what we think we're buying for all that money.
And I guess, Ozzy, he uses that, though he didn't quite put it this way, as a message to New Yorkers that while he may be cutting the budget for Medicaid, which grows so fast, or maybe he's just cutting the rate of growth, it doesn't mean that the patients are necessarily going to have to suffer. And I think he's trying to pit Medicaid recipients against the workers or the industry, if you will.
Right. I think a lot of people would be surprised that only 48 cents out of their dollar actually goes to the person walking into their home to provide care. And if you're spending a dollar on anything and you're only getting 48 cents going towards what you think you're purchasing, it raises questions as to how can it be run more efficiently.
And Errol, on the other clip, are you surprised that he singled out the pay of school superintendents? There, that $360,000 a year example that he used, and he mentioned others from around the state. While the usual boogeyman is teacher pay and teacher seniority.
No. There again, I'd encountered this. I've heard from folks on Long Island for years, and these are Republican conservatives, Al D'Amato being one of them, as a matter of fact. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen him in the last, say, 60 days where, and I've seen him, he's a weekly regular on my show, where he hasn't off camera just gone on an absolute tirade against these guys that they're making $300, $250, these guys who run these little districts out in Long Island. Now, to be fair about it, that is part of the deal out in some of these districts where you'll find entire, not just the school district, but an entire town or, arguably the entire county of Nassau organized around having really excellent schools, paying top dollar for it. And for some people, that means paying the superintendent of the school whatever he or she wants in order to keep those scores rolling in, to keep those great college admissions rates very high.
So, Ozzy, that also puts pressure on localities around the state when they turn to Albany and say, Governor Cuomo, legislature, please do something about our spiraling property taxes. Was he, by citing their own local school superintendents' high salaries, throwing it back in their faces and saying, yeah, you want me to control your property taxes?
Right. Well, E.J. McMahon, who's an economist with the Manhattan Institute, he was talking to me and a few other reporters afterwards, and he kind of characterized Cuomo's approach to schools, and he kind of told school districts, here's what I'd like you to cut. Here's where I think you guys can do it. Figure it out. He did not step in and say, I will help relieve, quote-unquote, unfunded mandates to you guys. I will not empower you to do something new that you couldn't do before. He pointed to them and said, your salaries for some of these guys are more than mine, and I am managing an entire state. And these guys, some of them are managing school districts with fewer than 1,000 children. He also pointed out in his presentation that the school districts have over $1 billion in reserves and over $600 million in unused stimulus funds. Now, these are school districts outside of New York City, but he's saying that there's money that these school administrators, not the teachers, not the students at all, but the administrators, the sort of middlemen, if you will, of education, that these are places that could be tweaked and adjusted. And he also noted that as Attorney General, he had investigated a lot of school districts and found fraud, and he kind of said there's a lot that these people can clean up.
So, listeners, we invite your reactions to Governor Cuomo's budget address yesterday. And maybe there are people who work inside the home health care industry, inside a local school district in New York City or outside of New York City, and want to talk about some of these things. Did the governor's examples that we played resonate with you on how localities can take control with less state aid and still make things okay for their people, or did you feel that the governor was kind of deflecting attention from what his responsibility is? 212-433-WNYC. Any reaction to Governor Cuomo's budget address? Then the ideas and specific numbers therein, 212-433-9692, or, of course, you can post it to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. With Errol Lewis, host of Inside City Hall on New York One, and WNYC political reporter Ozzy Pabra. Errol, Mayor Bloomberg is protesting the governor's budget. His, quite honestly, was not the first voice I expected to be out of the gate and onto the headlines. I thought maybe public employee unions or people like that. But the mayor was right out there, right away, saying that the state would cut, under the governor's proposal, 100% of revenue-sharing aid to New York City, while other localities in the state are only getting cut 2%. What's the issue with New York City? Explain what those numbers mean.
Sure. Revenue-sharing means all of the money gets into the general fund, and then the state sends some of it back. This was an innovation that goes back to Governor Rockefeller. In the past, and not last year, but the year before, New York got about $300 million. But that all went away last year. And they were hoping that they'd get back to where they were before. And when that turned out not to be the case, that's where that particular howl came from. Now, the governor's staff, the budget director, says, look, you didn't get any money last year. You're not getting any money this year. That's not a cut. That's just the way it is. You guys are not going to get the kind of money that some of the smaller cities get. And, you know, the state's rationale, in part, is that New York has a lot of other ways to raise money, as we all know, because we're coughing up these fees every other minute, right? We've got all kinds of parking and water bills and an income tax, and that's not true for a lot of the smaller localities. So the state is saying, on balance, New York is going to have to live without this $300 million.
Is the mayor right, Ozzy?
Well, it sort of depends. I mean, one of the mayor's spokespeople was telling me late last night to sort of explain how they came up with their billion-dollar figure about a cut. They said, yes, we're receiving we're not getting about $700 million that we were expecting in this year's budget. And then the spokesperson pointed to budget documents that the city received from the state as late as November. And in that was the indication that the state would be sending $800 million, I think, as part of, you know, the future outlook of the budget. And when budgets are put together, people say, look, we'll give you, you know, this amount this year, and next year we'll pay you a larger amount. And the city apparently was actually expecting this larger amount to come from the state, about $800 million. And however it might have been unrealistic for the city to bank on this with every economic indicator going south, you could question, and the mayor might get questioned that later today at his press conference.
Because it was a promise for the future being this coming year. That's why, Errol, the governor's budget director kind of bashed back at the mayor by saying, an analogy is helpful to understand this point, I'm quoting. He says, if I was paid $50,000 last year and I get paid $50,000 this year, my salary remains flat. And I would not characterize it as a cut of $10,000, even if I had hoped I would be making $60,000 this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's right on some level. But to follow up on what Ozzy said, when it came to education in particular, the mayor's people are upset because they're feeling like they're becoming victims of their own sound budgeting practices, meaning when they try to estimate in advance what the state might give them, they're not pulling a number out of the air. They're not making forward guesses or anything like that. They're relying on what the state tells them. And if the state tells them that they're going to give them, for example, $1 billion for education, and then they turn around and say, well, we're going to give you $500 million or less, then they're really scrambling. And because the city, unlike the state, does four-year budgets, does four-year projections, and really tries to stay within them, and this, too, is sort of an artifact and a remnant of the bad old days of the fiscal crisis in the 70s, it's almost impossible to plan. It drives them crazy, and I think that's the frustration you're hearing from the mayor today.
Emily in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello, Emily.
Hi. I was saying to the screener that I was really disappointed in the kinds of Armageddon types of reactions, although expected of a lot of the different groups out there. I think anybody knew that this was inevitable, and I'm sure there are things, whether it's mandate relief or other kinds of actions that the state can take, but the bottom line is there isn't money, and it isn't constructive to just simply say that every cut will cripple every industry and program.
Thank you very much. And Ozzy, is that what we're going to hear? Everybody representing every program jumping up and down and saying, this is going to cripple me, or is it going to be different this year?
It's going to be different every year, isn't it? I think they're immediately after the governor's budget presentation. Every reporter's email inbox or Twitter feed was bombarded with howls. It sort of caught my interest that 1199 SEIU, the union that represents healthcare workers, along with the Greater New York Hospital Association, which are members of the Medicaid redesign team, came out and said the targeted budget cut that the governor is expecting will decimate healthcare in New York. These are people that are working with the governor who are saying this. Then you have more traditional critics like Billy Easton of the Alliance for Quality Education, who said this is the largest cut in New York State history, and this will result in, and he went on a litany, fewer guidance counselors, fewer teachers, fewer arts, fewer music, fewer everything, you know, fewer desks, fewer ceilings, fewer walls. I mean,
so the governor would come back, Errol, and say, yes, maybe, but what's the alternative?
Right. Well, he'll certainly say that we don't, you know, we're at the end of the rope, and that's just the way it is.
And then, of course, people will talk about maintaining the millionaire's tax rather than letting that expire, really, on people making $250,000 plus.
No, that's right. That's right. But you know, the other thing.
But that only closes a piece of it anyway.
It only closes a piece of it. It's number one. Number two, it may not happen. And number three, the union leaders that I've been talking to are saying that they're signaling that they're not necessarily going to go all out. I don't know that we're going to see videos like that one that they famously aimed at Governor Patterson of the blind guy in a wheelchair saying, Governor, why are you doing this to me? I don't know that they're going to do that, because many of the changes that the governor is seeking are going to have to be obtained at the contract table. And some of the union leaders I'm talking to are saying, listen, people can do all the PowerPoint presentations and television ads they want. Well, when we get to the bargaining table, there's going to be nobody else in the room, and the editorial boards aren't going to be there, and the TVs aren't going to be there, and we're going to have a very different kind of a conversation. And I think that's where they're going to sort of make their last stand on this.
Errol Lewis from New York One, WNYC's Ozzy Papera, and Ziad in Manhattan, former chair of Community Board 12. Ziad, thank you for calling, and remind me, what neighborhood is Community Board 12?
Washington Heights and Inwood, your neighborhood.
As if I didn't know. Go ahead.
In 2002, when Mayor Bloomberg said that we have to cut 15% from our budget across all agencies, you know, we had a commissioner for the aging come to our community board and say, this is what I'm mandated to do. We asked him, and we knew the financial crunch we were in. We said, could we tell you where we can trim the fat and where the underutilized services are in our community and the aging, and then we'll tell you where to cut the 15%? That turned out to be a very innovative plan that no one had used. And the commissioner was so shocked by that. I think the governor should do the same thing with the municipalities or the district or province and just say, you have 2% that you must cut by July 1st. And you can tell me where you want to cut it, but we need 2% from every district in the state. And I think that's how he can cut the budget significantly.
Ozzy?
But that way the people get to tell him where they think they can afford the cuts, as opposed to having a broad brush choked across the state.
Well, the governor is actually implementing this kind of program. He has one committee that's looking at government consolidation. He has another one that's looking at prison consolidation. That's going to be combined with economic stimulus money to affected communities. And he has another one that is looking at – now I'm drawing a blank because I have to remember it.
Mandates, unfunded mandates is one.
I believe. But there's a series of these panels that he's put together that said, study these issues and report back to me. And it's almost to the point where he was left announcing yesterday budget targets as opposed to budget specifics.
Oh, we used that, Errol, hang on, because we're going to run out of time soon, but we used that clip earlier of the governor going through how money gets wasted and siphoned off when it comes to a home health aid, and
yep.
48% of the money, 48 cents is actually spent on the patient, and 52 cents goes into bureaucracy and mm-hmm. middlemen. So Karen in yeah. East Northport is a home care worker and physical therapist. Is that right, Karen?
Yes, that is.
So did you want to comment on that?
Yes, I did. I the governor is sort of speaking kind of in a vacuum. I mean, yes, the home health care bureaucracy is expensive, but you also need to compare that to if these people were in a hospital how much of a hospital, you know, dollar goes to the workers as well. It's the same sort of thing. I mean, there are the administrators and the equipment and all those other expenses as well. And having the people at home certainly is cheaper for Medicare or Medicaid than it is in the hospital.
Sure, and I don't think that the governor was arguing to institutionalize more people. I think just the opposite. I think he was saying, and Ozzie is nodding, that, yes, home health, whenever possible, by all means, usually cheaper than an institution. I mean, he didn't get into it in this detail, but we have to take all those greedy fingers off of it. We're almost out of time. I want to play one more clip. And this steps back from any of the specifics and just focuses on the governor's speech and the generational change from his father, Mario, who was famous for waxing eloquent about the need to expand government. Here is a minute of the son, as eloquent and expansive as I've ever heard him, frankly, about cutting government.
I love the concept of change. Everybody's in favor of change. You ask people, do we need change? Yes, we need change. Ask people in a relationship, ask people, husband and wife, do we need change? Oh, yes. We need a lot of change. That's right, everybody agrees. We need a lot of change. What they really mean is you need to change. They're doing pretty well where they are. You are the problem. And you really need to change, and you need to understand that. They like control, and they want to stay just the way they are. But everybody thinks they like change. When change actually comes to them, it's shocking, and it's frightening, and it's anxiety-producing. And that's where we are today. This is change. The situation is forcing and mandating change. We don't want to change. That's why we've never changed. That's why we're doing the same thing. I understand. But it can't go on because it's unsustainable.
All right. We have a minute left. Ozzie, quick reaction to that.
It was eloquent. Somebody is telling me that there's a certain comedic performer who echoed his type of style of delivery. So
he almost sounded like he was enjoying himself.
He was having fun, and so was the audience, surprisingly.
Which, it was ultimately an audience of lawmakers and other connected people, not the people in Washington Heights or in the Bronx or wherever who are really going to feel this pain, or some of the public sector workers. Errol, last thing, real quick. He
sure.
did not...
I mean, it underscored, I think, the psychological nature of all of this. Just like your caller was saying, telling everybody to cut 2% is one thing, but if those people in their heart and soul were hell-bent on a 13% increase, and you're saying cut 2% to them, it sounds like you're saying 15%. And so he's trying to adjust everybody's psychology. He's trying to ease us into it, and sometimes he uses humor to do that. I thought it was very effective.
Errol, I was waiting to see if he would take a position on Mayor Bloomberg's request to have the state change the seniority rules for teachers so the city could lay off, by merit, as the mayor sees it, rather than last hired, first fired. We didn't hear it one way or the other. Did he say anything behind the scenes?
Nope, didn't hear anything behind the scenes. He also didn't say the word pension, by the way. I think he's decided to limit the number of fights he's going to pick right now.
All right. Andrew Cuomo's budget address, obviously so much more coverage to come, and I apologize we didn't get to some of you who are calling in with your specific examples of waste. We will do a lot more on this as the budget season progresses from now through April 1st, and that's only April 1st if it's on time. Errol Lewis, Inside City Hall host on New York One, Ozzie Pabra, WNYC political reporter and writer of the Empire blog on our site. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll go back to the situation in the Middle East, getting very ugly now after days of exhilaration in Egypt. Stay with us.